and we are determined to have you in our laboratories so we can learn to do what you do. To that end, a very special device was installed in me. Its function, to suppress your more than human powers and abilities. The most powerful S-blocker ever built.
His smile widened.
And yes, it's been operating all the time I've been standing here. You are now quite helpless. I advise you to surrender. If not, I will be obliged to hurt you.
Random and Ruby looked at each other.
I really don't see what use hysteria is in this situation.
You idiot. Whatever we may be, we're not espers. We established that long ago.
And Jack Random reached inside himself and pulled up the last few sparks of his power. With impossible speed, he surged forward, crossing in an instant the space between himself and the machine with his face. He raised his sword and brought it savagely down towards the Fury's head. Flames flared around the steel blade. Young Jack Random raised a hand as though to block the blow. The blazing sword sheared through the flesh and metal hand, buried itself in Young Jack Random's metal skull, and then continued on down in a shower of sparks, cutting through the steel and flesh body till it erupted out of his groin. The two halves of the Fury fell slowly away from each other and lay sparking and spitting on the bare ground. Random stood over them, just a little out of breath.
That isn't possible.
It is if I believe it is. Now shut the hell up and die.
Random stamped on the left half of the metal head and crushed it flat under his boot. Ruby came over and stamped on the other side of the head, and then they both used their disruptors on the two halves of the body, blowing them apart. And out on the bare plain, every one of the surviving ghost warriors suddenly collapsed and lay still, as though all their strings had been cut.
Of course! He said he was Shub's focus for all their forces here. With communications being so difficult on Loki, they needed a booster to maintain their control, and that was him. With him gone, they're just so much metal junk. You know what, Jack? I think we just won this war.
Of course, I told you everything would be all right. You should listen to me more.
We're heroes! We're immortal! We're going to live forever!
They hugged each other for a long time, and then let go, and just stood companionably together. Enjoying being alive.
I'm taking our survival as a sign. No more pussyfooting. From now on, I do what needs to be done, and God help the guilty.
Sounds good to me. Did you have anything particular in mind?
Well, first we go find the two human armies, or what's left of them, break up the battle, and persuade the surviving rebel forces that their war is over. Without young Jack Random and his ghost warriors, they don't stand a chance, and they know it.
And then?
And then we go back to Vidar, and clean house.
Back at the city, the populace went mad with joy over the two legendary heroes who'd saved their city and their planet in their hour of greatest need. So when Jack Random asked them to do something for him, they didn't hesitate. Soon the whole surviving population of Vidar was gathered in the great square before the main gates, watching breathlessly as Vidar's surviving guards fashioned a series of nooses and hung them from the inner wall. To one side knelt Matthew Talon, once planetary controller, and Terrence Jax, once mayor of Vidar, and the few dozen rebels who'd survived the last battle. They all had their hands tied behind them. They looked for mercy in the faces of the crowd, but saw none. On Random and Ruby's other side knelt Delial and Bentley, and all their people, down to the lowest bureaucrat, also securely tied. Jack Random looked down on them all, with harsh, unforgiving eyes. Ruby Journey stood beside him, her face cold and expressionless. They knew about Peter Savage now.
You can't do this! I was pardoned! We all were! Parliament put us in charge here! You can't go against the authority of Parliament!
Watch me. You and your people plotted to leech this colony dry and then move on, never once thinking of all the colonists whose lives would be ruined. I call that treason.
We have backers, powerful backers. I could tell you their names.
They'll be in the computer somewhere. We'll find them. There's only one thing I want to know. That man, killed and gutted and placed in two crates. That was your idea, wasn't it?
It was Bentley's idea. We needed something to motivate you, alienate you from the rebels.
Who was the man?
Delisle shrugged and looked at Bentley, who said nothing. Ruby kicked the security chief in the ribs.
Nobody. Just someone we used. He wasn't important.
Everyone's important. That's what separates us from Shub.
Delisle started to splutter some apology or excuse, but Random just looked at him, and he fell silent.
They deserve to die, but we only ever had the best interests of Loki at heart. We rebelled because we had legitimate grievances. You, of all people, should be able to understand that.
I understand. But you allied yourself with Shub, the enemies of humanity. The end doesn't always justify the means.
Jack, I'm really not sure this is a good idea. Hang a few to make a point, sure, but this... Delisle's right. Parliament is never going to approve this.
Then to hell with Parliament.
He gestured to the guards, survivors of the army he'd led. They looked at him with worshipful eyes. Random gestured at the ropes.
Hang them. Hang them all.
The guards dragged the prisoners over to the inner wall. Most went quietly. Delisle screamed and kicked and sobbed right until they put the noose around his neck and cut off his breath forever. Talon looked back at Random and Ruby with Prophet's eyes and raised his voice so the crowd would be sure to hear.
They are monsters. You can't trust them. They'll turn on you in the end because you're only human and they're not. They're monsters. Monsters.
The politicians and the rebels hung side by side on the inner wall of the Dar, and the population of the city cheered and cheered and cheered. Ruby looked at Random.
Hang them all. They're all politicians.
All dirty. Hang them all.
Deathstalker Honor, Cry Havoc is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Ann Flosnick, Nick Sampson, Casey Jones, Ken Jackson, Kate Torrey, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Chris Rowan. Graphic audio sound design by Dan Smith. The Deathstalker theme was composed by Norman Vandersliz. Additional original music by Dan Smith. If you enjoy Deathstalker Honor, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.cuttingaudio.com. Keep listening for special previews from other graphic audio titles. Next time in Deathstalker Honor. In a human empire of technological wonders, an old human affliction has reared its ugly head, and the Empire's scientists can do nothing about it but quarantine the afflicted. The jungle planet, Lacrimae Christi, serves this purpose. Mother Superior Beatrice and her beleaguered nuns have taken on the holy mission to minister and bring succor to the poor victims of this dreaded disease.
God is always with us. He just won't fight our battles for us.
It's a brutally difficult task, but it's made hellishly worse when the Hayden Men cyborgs come to claim the planet as their own. The Mother Superior's request for help can only be answered by Owen Deathstalker and his unique squad of fighters.
A Hayden ship just dropped out of hyperspace right next to us. How the hell did they know we were going to be here?
Tell you what, you ask them and I'll concentrate on getting us the hell out of here.
Is it too late to turn this ship around?
When Owen and Hazel's team finally fight their way to the thinly fortified walls of Lacrimae Christi's only city, they are confronted with an overwhelming enemy force of genetically augmented supermen, equipped with special troops of the fiercest alien killing machines ever encountered by man. There's something else to deal with, too. A mysterious life form indigenous to the planet.
It is alive, but it's like nothing else I've ever encountered.
It thinks slow thoughts, but it's growing angry. And it knows where we are.
And by the time the dust settles, Owen may have lost forever the one he holds most dear.
Owen! Help me!
Hazel!
Deathstalker Honor, Episode 6, The Red Brain.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Submitted for your consideration, Fulcroft Sanitarium, Rye, New York, 6 a.m. The director arrives for another workday.
Good morning, Mrs. Mikulka.
No calls, Dr. Smith.
2 miles away, a crew works on a telephone pole.
Catch anything?
No, Mr. Kogstad. The lines are quiet.
Sever them.
Meanwhile, on nearby Long Island Sound, 3 speedboats bob with the gentle motion of the waves.
Anybody spot our man?
The sun is coming right off the windows. See for yourself.
Screw it. We can't wait all day. The word is go. Repeat, the word is go.
Harold Smith, director of the Fulcroft Sanitarium, thought he was arriving for another normal workday. But Harold Smith, also director of the super-secret government agency known as CURE, is about to enter a realm that makes the Twilight Zone look like a quilting bee.
Dr. Smith, there's a terrible racket going on outside.
I know. Tell the lobby guard to retreat to a safe place. Fulcroft is under attack.
Cease fire! Cease fire! We surrender! Freeze! DEA! IRS! We're the goddamn IRS!
The evil machinations of the capitalistic supercomputer known as Friend have made Harold Smith seem responsible for $12 million worth of drug money, unreported income, or both. Remo Williams and Chun, the master of Chununju, the other two elements comprising CURE, come to Smith's aid. But Smith's solution to his problems may be more than either man has bargained for.
Smitty, what's the good word? Or in your case, the bad one?
Greetings, Harold the Resolute.
Remo, you have failed CURE and your country, and you, Master Chun, have failed your Emperor. You above all know that once CURE is compromised, certain instructions are inviolate.
There is always time to die, Smith. If that is your wish, it will be carried out.
Death and taxes. Destroyer number 97. Identity crisis.
Look. Her hand.
Seemingly with a life of its own, it was spidering up her chest to her throat. It stopped and gripped the square metal pendant.
Take.
This? Ryan touched it with his fingers. A nod of the head, slow and painful, answered him. He carefully pulled it up, wincing as he realized it was stuck to her with dried blood. He peeled it loose and over the tangled gray hair.
Open.
He turned it in his hand. The workmanship reminded him vaguely of silver he'd seen down in the southwest. Indian crafts. For a moment, he couldn't see how to get inside it.
Open.
I'm trying, but it's stiff. Don't want to break it when... Here.
Rona said to find you. Find you. Quest, look after.
Slowly, Ryan opened the locket and found that it contained 2 things. A tiny ringlet of blonde hair and a picture. A faded, pale brown portrait.
Who is it?
Your son, Ryan Carter. It is your... son.
10 years ago, Ryan encountered a woman named Sharona Carson. Now, in the hell-blasted ruins of New York City, his past has come back. But before Ryan and his companions can come to terms with this, they must first deal with a much more immediate problem.
Scabbies.
Head for the exit!
There's too many of them!
Christy!
Relationships are made, bonds are tested, and death is faced head-on. Come Deathlands number 13, Seedling, everything will change.
Well done, guys. This drug ring is closed. Stryker?
Everything's good out here. I'll see you out, Able Team.
Who's doing this to my operations?
I have heard whispers, Colonel. Groups have told of a Stony Man.
Bring them to me. I want to see them suffer as we have suffered.
A powerful Soviet hardliner has discovered the identities and plans of the Stony Man force. With this information, he's ready to execute his plan. A plan that will make him the undisputed ruler of the Russian Mafia. And then, Russia itself.
This is the last of the cash. Are we ready to make a deal?
Die, American scum!
Lyons, I heard shooting. What happened?
Schwartz, Blancanales, we were ambushed. Jesus, Poland, they're dead.
Now, Phoenix Force, with the guidance of Katzenellenbogen, must make a decision that could go against everything they stand for in the name of revenge.
As of this moment, Stony Man takes orders from no one. Schwartz and Blancanales will be avenged, no matter the cost.
But Schwartz and Blancanales' apparent deaths are all just part of the plan.
Now, Schwartz, you will tell me the location of Stony Man Farm.
Never.
Oh, I'm quite sure you will.
Stony Man number 39, Breach of Trust. Coming in June 2006. Only from Graphic Audio. The movie in your ears. The baronies ruling post-apocalyptic America are no more. Yet even as settlers leave the fortress cities and attempt to build new lives in the untamed outlands, a deadly new struggle is born. Amidst the sacred Indian lands in Wyoming's Bighorn Mountains, the Millennial Consortium, led by Benedict Snow, is engaged in the excavation of ancient artifacts, turning the newly liberated outlands into a hell zone.
Incoming!
Shit! Get down!
Get out from under the wagons. Your people are sitting ducks. Retreat!
Kane and the Cerberus Warriors organize a strike against Snow and his band, only to find themselves delving into a world beyond science, where Indian mythology is fact. Here they will come face to face with the fury of a Lakota woman warrior.
My mother fasted for 3 days, then entered the sweat lodge, and went into a trance that lasted 4 days. She opened a channel to the great mystery, but she was also open to other energies. She would not awaken. My father broke with tradition and tried to rouse her.
Had she died?
Worse. She had met a ghost in her journey on the spirit path, and he had stolen her soul. When she opened her eyes, it was not Nightingale Woman who looked at us, but Tawasi, the Owl Prophet. He told us how he had ensnared my mother's soul. If we did not do as he bid, in every way, her soul would remain imprisoned.
What did you do?
What I had to do. I killed my mother.
Driven by power, hatred, and revenge, this warrior known as Catamount will join forces with Benedict Snow, and the two will find themselves on the verge of uncovering a force of unfathomable evil.
We share this body. When he first touched the Kaimei, we both understood we were kindred in nature. A link was forged. We share each other's knowledge and experiences. Our minds are intertwined. There is no separation any longer.
Outlanders number 35, Cerberus Storm. Available in June 2006.